Help-seeking practices for victors, not victims. Over the past 5 years, my experiences in STEM operate under a cycle of instruction and teaching that has done more harm than good for myself and my closest friends, many of whom have been weeded out. We cannot interrupt the cycle unless we face that the cycle exists with nimbleness and critical reflection, to which Jeff, a learning doctor I discovered during office hours, calls system navigation. The entire narrative about the underperformance of students in college is required when there's a financial structure that is based on saving those students. If everybody in my CS courses received a full score on their ACT and SAT, then the billion-dollar industry of tests and college prep is gone. If everybody in my college CS courses received a passing grade, then it is likely that teacher will receive shade from their colleagues for conducting a class that is too easy. I will continue to call out some of the truths I've experienced in my college journey in hopes of resonating with your college experiences. However, I will also present a solution that has empowered me not to be weeded out, earn over $30,000 in scholarships, complimentary travel around the world due to my mediocre ability to write personal statements, and ignite a career path in community college teaching I never even knew was a possibility. Imagine if everybody in our neighborhoods feels fully actualized, graduated college, and earned a stable middle-class job within a year of graduating. If that were the case, a whole scholarly body of work around community-focused interventions would be broken. These cats construct hills of our downtroddenness, then they create industries about our victimhood so they can perceive themselves as savior and make it a generation of income and about status, said Chris Emden, one of my favorite speakers of all time. As students, if we're lucky and gritty enough to have made it this far, we understand that we have an opportunity to interrupt the cycle by not being complicit in the articulation of these stories. It helps to experiment in setting clear goals for ourselves, so we learn how to learn and complete our coursework with genuine fulfillment. If haters are always telling and publishing stories of our downtroddenness, they will always see us as victims and never see us as victors. We will not be a victim of poor STEM pedagogy, where we gotta act that way, dress this way, speak a certain way, and perform STEM only in this particular systematic way that our teachers are barely staying above water to grade anyway. Education was never meant to be institutionalized or systematized to begin with. Saying no to the banking and labor model of education that grinds our most precious resource, human capital, to dust. When we, keyword we, do this, they make us complicit in the dominant narratives so the students who've been weeded out become the marketing scheme of the brokenness. The restoration of our collective humanity is the most essential piece of any revolutionary work. This is why there's a dozen students who continuously show up to my supplemental instruction sessions for data structures and algorithms, because we restore humanity by co-learning at a pace that is revealing just how flawed and constrained traditional methods of teaching are in the very little shared time that we have in our courses. For more on this, especially if you're going to be a future educator, please read How Learning Works, 7 Principles to Smart Teaching by Ambrose et al. Oftentimes, it's about the psychological work first. Harriet Tubman said, "I freed XYZ amount of slaves. I would have freed so many more if they knew they were already free." When our minds are free and our souls are fed, our brains will follow. When our school system, meaning the classes we're in, does not feed our sense of self or belonging, it's no question we will replicate these types of oppression. Free our teachers to free the students. Here is my proposal for y'all. Generate help-seeking practices and find support for each and every single class you struggle with. And if this is the first time you've heard those three words, help-seeking practices, together and have no idea what I'm talking about, don't worry. I was in your shoes just about 2 years ago. Without doing this for the past 5 years, this being getting help and getting support, I would have 100% been weeded out, fallen off the rails, or have gone away. Implicit here is the collective healing work many people in academia, including myself, haven't done yet. Due to the attachment of systems to policies rooted in the gut of dominance and control, from our GPAs to our teachers' salary caps and workload, the incentives passed down by the systems act as if they were the only ones to grant us affirmation, value, and success. As if those elements cannot be created by ourselves and with our students, learning communities collectively. This is taking its toll on everyone. Just look around. How many people in higher ed have a spark left in their eyes? The blind pursuit of capital or curriculum and syllabus at the expense of humanity is the underlying flu that robs all of us of our collective worth. By virtue of growing up in the Bay Area in the early 2000s and having friends who live in the marginalized communities we label in higher ed, we have genius to share that is suppressed in our traditional schooling practices because they don't want to invest to see our light. We gotta empower young folks to find and understand their humanity and identity, to position them to see that you all are inherently wealthy. Contemplate this. The more we repeat a behavior, we reinforce the identities associated with that behavior. In fact, the word identity was originally derived from the Latin word essentitas, which means being, and identitum, which means repeatedly. So your identity is literally repeated beingness. Take a moment to reflect on what growing up in your communities on planet Earth means. Research the famous people that grew up in your neighborhoods, or have a deep conversation with people who have played a huge role in your life and what their upbringing was like. Schools have to reimagine what they think of as curriculum to incorporate community, cultural wealth, and capital to be just as essential as computer science, English, math, physics, if not more quintessential. The moment a student registers for a class, from Four Principles of the Book, How Learning Works by Ambrose et al., given their prior knowledge, how they organize knowledge, their motivation, their current ability to be a self-directed learner, before they even meet their teachers or begin the course, they will very likely be either an A student or a student who's about to get weeded out, given the inequitable game of grades. As CS professor Cesa Chaudhry, who earned his PhD in CS from Princeton University, stated, "When we blindly pursue the curriculum or syllabus, we are expecting our students to run a marathon at the end of a semester when some can barely run a mile to begin. It's when we center the human dimension, learning how to learn, incentivizing the advanced learners to engage and inspire the less motivated students in the very little amount of shared class time we have, where we might begin that healing work for the marathon. Yes, educators are healers, and yes, students who are hyped about class content and have a stronger learning foundations in our very classes could lead many small group lessons if given the proper guidance and human, not capital, incentive. This happens in every SI session I host for 24 students in a computer science class, by the way. This can be designed. If I can do it, you can do it too. One of the most important things you can do for yourself is building a small support team for each of your courses. From strategically going to office hours with a focus on human dimension before content, to tutoring centers, to reaching out to students in the class by stating where you are in the course, what's going well, what you're struggling with, and whether or not they like to set up a time to study together. From research on habit formation, the plan, act, and reflect portion of the Learning Doctor's syllabus, and hundreds of office hour meetings with Jeff Anderson, here's an image I created that you may save, print, or better yet, recreate for yourself in your own words. So the first row goes like this. Look for a sign or a cue, right? And in creating good habits, we want to make that sign obvious. And in breaking bad habits, we want to make it invisible. Number two, what is the need? In creating good habits, we want to make that need pleasant to pursue. In breaking bad habits, we want to make it unattractive or unpleasant. Number three, what's the movement? What moves are we going to make? In creating good habits, we want to make those moves simple. in breaking bad habits, we want to make those difficult. Number four, what is the return? Right? We want to make our return delightful and metacognitive and reflectful. And in breaking bad habits, we want to make that return painful, unamusing. So let me give you an example focused on help-seeking practices using this table. Number one, do make it obvious. We can all use help in our learning journey. That much is obvious. Lead with intentionality that you are willing to be vulnerable and be willing to communicate. Share what is going well for you and what you're struggling with in the class and multiple dates and times you're willing to study with your peer. Go into office hours. Go seek tutoring services. Don't make yourself invisible to your professors, peers, and support services at your college. Just don't do it, please. Number two, do make it pleasant. Think about the most fruitful experiences you've ever had in your life. There's a good chance it's with another human being. We are surrounded by fascinating people in our college journey, and we create the culture where we occupy. Don't reach out for help only one time with your peers, going to office hours, trying out tutoring, then giving up on that service and interaction completely. Learning how to create healthy help-seeking practices will require finding the sweet spot, a link to Jeff's post, and a willingness to remember the reward at the end is much greater than content knowledge. Number three, do make it simple. If you're messaging your classmates on what's going well and what you're struggling with, along with your availability on when you can meet, copy and paste this message and send it to classmates you believe in, based off their behavior and attitude in class. If you are going into office hours, in the first week of school, put office hour times and locations into your weekly calendar to reduce friction. If you're going into tutoring, make an appointment and follow through. Don't overthink what reaching out for help really means. Remember, people thirst for a human connection, especially in academic settings, so lead authentically and learn together. Number four, do spend time reflecting on what you enjoyed about the help-seeking practice you tried. Think about what you can do differently and what you can do better. How to prepare, how to experiment, how to adopt a growth mindset about seeking help. Don't operate with a deficit lens by focusing only on what went wrong or was unsatisfying. Fall five times and stand up six. Please share in the comments below what help-seeking practices mean to you, what your best help-seeking practice story is. Please try implementing the habit table above and let me know how that goes. What are two useful things you found in the post? If one isn't the table I drew, how can I improve on the table so it makes more sense? What's your number one habit you attribute your successes to? And what's your table look like? Thanks. See y'all next week.